It's Monday, January 20th, you filthy fucking savages. Uncle Joey's back. No, there's no music today, but the song of the day is Megalomania off the fucking Sabotage album. You put that on this morning, you'll make you want to jump out of the window. The church is brought to you by, listen. Christmas is gone and come and gone, but the Super Bowl is quickly approaching. We just seem the tip of the iceberg. Did you see what happened last night with McGregor? You could have won money. Do me a favor. Head over to mybookie.ag to make your predictions a reality. You were sitting there going, oh, McGregor's going to kill him. Did you bet? No. Then shut the fuck up, all right? Now, football's another thing. You got Tennessee, whatever the fuck, whoever the fuck is in there now, I don't even know. But all I need to tell you is you can pool your bets together for a bigger payout. But it all starts with mybookie.ag. Listen, if you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit two, they give you one. All right? What are we talking about here, Joy? We're talking about the Super Bowl. We're talking about UFC. We're talking about the best shit to make money on. You ready? College basketball. So get your shit together. All you got to do is promo code CHURCH to activate your offer. Once again, promo code CHURCH to get your extra cash from MyBookie. You bet, you win, you get paid. The church is also brought to you by my motherfucking favorite, CBD Lion. Last night, I got in the car in Fresno. I drove 3 fucking hours. I got home at like 1:30. I had a piece of lasagna. I cleaned up all my shit. I hooked up my sleep apnea machine. I slept 5 hours. The baby jumped on my face at like 9 in the morning and kissed me and said she was headed to church. My point is I got up, I had a little coffee, had a couple fucking bumps. CBD Lion was right there. I popped a little CBD gummy. Boom! Here we are. Fucking tip-top Magoo. Nobody's fucking nodding. Nobody's doing nothing. We're all feeling good. CBD Lion is the way to go. No more liquor store CBDs. No more buying liquor store CBD at a fucking supermarket. Go fuck yourself. Go to CBDLion.com right now. Look at the website and then get back to me. All right, bitches? Kick this motherfucking muley. There ain't no song. Bud Baker, what's happening, you fucking savage? How are you?
I'm good. Thanks good for having me.
You. Good to have you.
Good to meet you, too. I'm a fan.
I'm
so.
A fan of yours, man. I watched some of your stuff, and you're very interesting. Before the podcast, we were talking about drinking, but we basically...
Yeah, we both quit.
You were... drinking in 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And I quit snorting coke 12 years ago.
Yeah. And you snort it dry. No alcohol. Like a psychopath.
Water. Water.
Like a fucking serial killer.
I would get a fucking package and get one of those big gallons of water.
Yeah.
Because in my fat, cocaine addicted mind, it was okay to do coke as long as I drank water.
Yeah, you got to stay hydrated.
That's the secret.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely.
Everybody else doesn't know. All these other people, those are the only reason why they're getting fucked up, I'm not fucked up.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
I just got bugs in my face and I pick them.
Right. I'm not homeless
hours.
If I have a briefcase.
Yeah. But I'm drinking water with coke.
Yeah.
Which in my sick mind, looking back at it, I'm not kidding you guys.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
What do you want from me? I just drank 3 gallons of water.
Yeah.
Who else drank 3 gallons of water today? Nobody.
I used to do shit like that, too, where I'd make up rules in my head.
You make up rules in your head. And then if I ate sushi the next morning, I was healed.
You're good, yeah.
If I had, like, a couple pieces of albacore,
right.
I put the albacore, I had, like, some cocaine, fighting germs. I'm dead serious with you people
when
I tell you this. These are not jokes.
It makes sense to me.
It really did. I would go all-you-can-eat sushi, and I would drink a bottle of that fucking red juice.
Right.
When it was
pomegranate.
Right.
I would drink a gallon of it, which is like eating a fucking sugarcane stick.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, it was like, God healed me.
Yeah.
Nah,
I'd go out, get smashed, and then go home. And if I drank a whole Pedialyte, you know, the infant thing with electrolytes, I'd be like, I'm fine. Like because I'd wake up without a hangover. So if you wake up without a hangover, whatever you did the night before doesn't count. Right? That's like how I, in my brain, I thought that was fine.
No, the addict, the mind works. How do you feel now that you don't smoke dope?
I don't smoke.
Did you ever smoke dope?
I did. I used to smoke weed, but I think I quit smoking weed just because, like, I wasn't getting as much done as I wanted to.
Okay.
And that was, like, quitting smoking weed was so fucking easy. It's like the withdrawal is just boredom. And that's it. So if you can deal with being bored.
Yeah, that is the withdrawal.
You're fine.
You know, you're from D.C. originally.
Mm-hmm.
You went to Emerson College. And Lee are fucking Goombas alumni.
Yep.
We sat here and you two young kids broke my heart by saying that you thought it was a waste to go to fucking college.
It is a waste.
You know.
If you're in entertainment, it's a fucking waste.
Yeah, especially art school. Yeah, art school.
Now, look at it from a guy like Maya's perspective. Like, I came from Cuba. You know what it would be like to go to an American college? Like, that was like my parents, my mother's dream. Like,
yeah,
for me to go to like a Notre Dame and shit and rah-rah and paint your face. And then you go and you go through this whole, because when you look at it in hindsight, it's like this brainwashing.
Right.
Because I think you guys get it when you're third year of college.
Yeah.
You're like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that you've picked your major.
Yeah.
You start thinking. You start double checking yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that fucks with you.
Yeah.
That fucks with you because your friend Susie, who's a dumb fuck, who her father beat her with a whip, they hit her in the head with a brick. She had to quit school because she got pregnant when she was 18.
Right.
She's working at the stock market, driving a Mercedes Benz.
Yeah.
She hasn't sucked a cock in 8 months because you don't need to. You know, I mean, so you start, I don't know, in your mind as a college. This is why it's just this whole thing kills me about college. And I've been obsessed
with it. It's such a scam.
Lee was the one who really, I go, Lee, let me ask you a question. When you go to these interviews, do people even bring up Emerson? Like if you walked into, like if I was a Hollywood mogul, me being me, Joey Diaz, somebody who started like as an assistant to somebody.
Yeah.
And I scammed myself into VP of operations.
Right.
And then I became like, if I interviewed you for a job, I'd be like mesmerized. Like, so you went to Emerson College. Oh, my God. Like, to me, it was so prestigious.
Yeah.
You know, I heard of Emerson, but Emerson for entertainment.
Yeah.
Right. The only time I ever got asked was probably like the first job. Like the first job out of college when you're going to intern.
Right. And they're like, did you go to college?
Right.
And you're like, yes, check.
Everything else after that, all they care about is your experience.
Yeah.
And college, like for me, I should have, if I was smart, I would have gone to like even University of Colorado and done computer stuff. Then that's something worthwhile.
Yeah.
Going to art school. And I was lucky. Like I was sure I knew what I wanted to do. I had people who graduated from Emerson and then went and had to do like another year somewhere because they decided, oh, I want to go to law school instead.
Yeah.
And they just spent $200,000 to get like a film degree that they'll never, ever even think about.
I have a friend from Emerson that was in costume design and it took her 6 years and then she realized she wanted to be a physical trainer and then she had to go to fucking a whole other thing. Yeah. And it was like, Jesus Christ, you know, like, and it's... And now she's just, I think she just bought a house finally. But it's like, you can't do anything with it. I mean, and even for me, I was going on auditions and shit. So they didn't even care that I went to college. They were like, oh, you have no experience whatsoever. Like in the real world, it doesn't count. Like your play that you did in college doesn't count. I should have just fucking moved to LA or moved to New York.
How old were you when you got into stand up?
I was 27.
Okay, so you were not. Were you thinking stand-up at Emerson?
No, not at all.
Not at all. It was the farthest thing from
I didn't even want to do stand-up when I started it. Like, I was just kind of, I just had a bad year. And I was lost, and I was like, maybe I'm going to be a dog trainer, or I'll be like a social worker. And my friend was like, you would suck at both of those things. You're not a warm person. You don't have the personality for that. So just go and do, like, try doing jokes because you're always sending them to me. Just go try to do stand-up. And I tried it, and I'm an addict, so I got a laugh, and then I kept going. I kept going every night. I'd just gotten out of this relationship with a guy that was pretty physically abusive, like it was a domestic abuse situation. And I was just like, he was an actor, and I was like, I want nothing to do with the acting world. I don't want to fucking even look at a headshot ever again. And stand-up just became kind of a way to talk about the shit that was happening.
Did you act in high school?
Yeah.
See, another thing I didn't do. Because I didn't get along with Mr. Pullman. Trust me, I was on Facebook looking for this motherfucker. Just to friend him to tell him to suck my dick. You miserable fuck. It was 15 credits and it was stage handing.
Yeah.
And all you built was two stages a fucking year.
Right.
So his name was Bob Pullman. And in high school, speaking of allegations, he used to sell weed to us.
Yeah.
He used to get weed shipped in from Hawaii in 1980.
It's not really an allegation.
Yeah. $35 for a fucking eighth of Thai stick. It was like a stick with weed tied around it.
Yeah.
And he didn't like me, so he never let me. But then, my freshman year, I took Intro to Performing Arts. Or some stupid fucking thing like that. Like, it was a quarter of doing each.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, I had a lesbian teacher who I really liked. She was chubby, the whole lesbian outfit. It was a it was tough being a lesbian in the 70s. It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
And she said something to me one day. She goes, I want you to do, it was improv.
Yeah.
And she goes, I want you to do lip sync a song. I'm like, what? And she goes, I want you to lip sync a song. And I go, you know what? It was the weirdest thing. Like, somebody had, you ever talked in the sixth grade, the teacher told me if I behave on Fridays, he let me sing in front of the class.
Yeah.
So I was very embarrassed about it. But on Fridays, I would go up there and put Frankie Valli on.
Yeah.
Every Friday at 1 o'clock, we would break up into groups. We'd have Kool-Aid and shit. We'd all get sugared up and stuff. And we'd fucking, I'd sing.
Frankie Turn on the old tunes.
Yeah, I'd sing Frankie Valli songs. His name was Mr. Levito.
So, and when you actually sing them, or would you lip sync them?
What? I would lip sync them and sing them at the same time. I could sing. I was in a band. Then my voice changed and everything turned to hell.
How did it change this much?
Oh, this is eating badass, smoking weed, cigarettes.
You swallowed a chainsaw.
Oh, yeah. This is fucking crazy. So it was just weird because I wanted that memory to go away.
Yeah.
So that was seventh grade. Then I got left back in the seventh grade. And by the eighth grade, nobody really remembered. So for freshman year, to somebody just to drop it on me, like,
they're pulling it back in.
I was like, God damn it, the word got out. Like, now people are going to make me karaoke. That was probably the beginning of karaoke. So I'll never forget, I went up there and I got on stage and I did Shattered by the Rolling Stones, and I brought the fucking place down.
Yeah.
Like the whole class was fucking going crazy and the word got out.
That's a certified tune.
Nobody made me do it again or anything like that. That's not the point. But she was like, somewhere along the line, I see entertainment for you. And I was like, are you fucking retarded? Like, this is where this ends. Like, you're just stupid. That was just a joke. That's
all I
am. Yeah. Playing around.
So did you want to be a comic?
No.
Not at all.
But I was a fan of Richard Pryor.
Right.
Like, all in on those three albums.
Yeah.
You know, Was It Something I Said by Centennial? I was all in on those. So that's not how it was for me. But you were acting already at Emerson.
Yeah. But I was always a fan of comedy. Like, I used to watch Insomniac every night. Every fucking night.
How good was that show?
God, it was a great
show.
That
was the original Anthony Bourdain show. Yeah. You really think about it now.
It was.
Insomniac was the blueprint.
Yeah.
You know. But fucking Dave had to stop drinking then. Fuck. I'd suck a shame on him. Fucking quitter.
The thing, like, for me, though, was, like, I don't know about you guys, but at 18, like, I was sure what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was sure of it. And looking back at 18, like, now looking at 18-year-olds, I'm like, I can't believe we trust them.
Yeah.
Like, I felt so adult at 18. And now I feel, honestly, now I feel less like an adult. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's weird.
I don't know. I look at an 18-year-old and I'm like, yeah, you got it. It's all on you. Like, I feel like they're fine. I don't know. They seem like adults to me. But maybe that's just because I don't.
Fuck no.
Yeah, I'm just
no.
Listen, I'm not saying they have fully developed brains or anything, but they're not an adult's problem
anymore.
I'm
not putting an 18-year-old down, but I'm thinking about me being 18. Like, I'm thinking about the things I did at 18, I didn't make, I think, a good decision at the age of 18.
No.
I really did.
No, they're not going
Everything was bad. Everything was bad because I thought I knew everything.
Yeah, but they're not old. They're not, like, young enough to where their mistakes are an adult's problem anymore. You know, like, if an 18-year-old fucks up, that's their fuck up. they can deal with it. That's what I mean.
Yeah, but an 18, a coked up Joe Diaz would look you in the eye and say, I'm going to be an astronaut. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like that type of shit. I didn't know how to become an astronaut. I had no idea how to do any of those things at that age.
Thank God you figured it out.
I gambled. I owed money. I left. I went to Colorado and they had.
Yeah.
I always was not against. Like, even now, I'm like, maybe I should go take 3 credits a semester.
Yeah.
Go to Valley. I've been fighting with this with myself for years. But with the baby and comedy, I just really don't have a night. I looked up the schedule. You got to go like 3 nights a week.
Yeah.
I can't go to college 3 nights a fucking week. And doing it online, that's not for Uncle Joey.
Yeah.
I want to be in a setting. I want to learn with other people. I want people to ask questions that I didn't fucking ask and go, why didn't I come up with that question?
Right.
It's a class setting. If there was one night a week, it's like acting class.
Yeah.
I'd love to go to an acting class.
Yeah.
But guess what? Rosebud, I love you to death. I don't want to have to fucking meet you on a Tuesday at 4 to rehearse I Love Lucy. I'm not in the fucking mood.
Right.
I'm not in the fucking mood, okay? That's not going to happen, you know? That shit used to kill me.
Yeah.
And once I started working, like, once I started working and going to acting class.
Yeah.
And come on, this is, whoa.
Yeah, there's.
We're just doing a fucking scene.
Right.
From Ricky, whatever the fuck.
This isn't actually Gone with the Wind. We don't actually have to be acting like this all the time. That's the thing. I feel like that's why I wanted to get away from that world is like those people, actors, they don't know that the real, nobody talks like them. Nobody, it's not always a scene. Not everything is so like, but it's our baby. You know, like the way that they talk is, it's like it's written. You know what I'm saying?
You know, this whole thing with the Oscars, you really got to think about those, how strong those words are that Ricky Gervais said about.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, it was a joke to us, but America. But he really did.
Yeah.
Say what he wanted to say. And he goes, get your little things and get the fuck off the stage.
Yeah.
No disrespect to anybody I've worked with. I've done a bunch of movies. I'm happy I got in them. I'm very fortunate.
Yeah.
But the actor is a different animal than the stand-up comic.
Yeah.
And we're so different, but so far apart. Like, I feel the actor, I did a movie where an actor pushed the envelope on everything.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the main actors.
Yeah.
But every time I shot with him, this was years ago.
Yeah.
It was so weird thinking about him now, how fucking much of a dick he was.
Yeah.
And it was like, he did things to piss people off, little things, but then he came off as the ha 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 guy, like
right.
a sweetheart type of guy.
Yeah.
And he irritated the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
The main thing that bothered me about him is that he did something. I can't.
You're going to dig into it. You're going to.
He was just a fucking, he had done something. And if anybody knows anything about that, when you talked to him, you felt like he had done it for 30 years and he was a superstar. He did it 4 times and he got cut. And that was the end of his career.
Yeah.
And then he became an actor. And it was just so weird that we're stand-ups. We live out that. I live that out by going on stage and saying what the fuck I want to say.
Yeah.
I'm not waiting for your fucking lines on a piece of paper.
Right.
And I got to act them out. It's like when an actor becomes a boxer. That's when your mind, crosses reality fucking. Well, really? Because I threw 2 punches at a guy in a movie. Now I'm going to start training. And I used to go to Justin Fortune's gym in Hollywood. He used to throw actors out.
Yeah.
All the time. And it was hilarious.
Yeah.
And the best was when they would go, you know what? Put me in the ring. And he would go, all right, I'll train you for a week.
Yeah.
And he would put you in a ring against some killer.
You'd come out of it and just be like, I'm going to transition.
Yeah, the guy fought 18 times and went to jail for killing his baby's mama.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out on parole, so now he's got him at the gym.
Yeah.
That guy, Justin, would put him up against guys like that. Like, oh, yeah, you're a tough guy on CSI New York.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It was particularly CSI. He was an actor on New York CSI.
Oh,
yeah. He used to go there every morning, complete dick.
Yeah.
Parked his fucking car where he didn't have to park it. always went in, had to have his own space, you know, had the expensive gear on, just a douchebag. And me and this guy would be in the corner, and I was like 400 pounds. I'd just be hitting the back. That's when I first started working out.
Yeah.
And he would come in there and hit mitts. And the trainer he had him fucking like, was just lying to him. Because that's how those trainers get paid.
Right.
We should do a special sparring thing. I'll only charge you $400 an hour on that. I mean, I used to hear him. This guy was paying like $800 a fucking session.
Right.
Those guys grind you. Once they know you're an actor and they tap into that, you want to be a tough guy.
Right.
That's 6 months. I'll have you stabbing fucking Mickey Rourke and Stallone in the heart.
It's, and every actor believes.
You have no idea if you listen
that
to this
they're
at
like that.
Guys, this is why this is a complete different world than what the fuck you illusion. It's so completely weird. I saw one guy in particular, CSI New York. I think he was one of those guys that checked blood on the show.
Yeah.
It wasn't the star of the show. I saw him go in there every day, jump rope.
Yeah.
You know, and he would yell at people. He would have a personal assistant with him who would like rub him down with towels and water and shit. You know, these guys aren't making that
not
much
a drop
money.
Of blood on him.
Yeah, not just, a drop of blood.
Doesn't even need a towel.
I saw Justin personally. I saw three actors get beat up so bad they picked up their bag and never came back.
It's beautiful.
Did any of them come in and say, oh, I'm researching a role? I just imagine that.
Of course.
You.
Yeah, right? They had to.
No. These were guys that at one part in their TV career or movie, they had to be a tough guy, and they go, well, let me back it up now. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, they thought they
you
were.
You see them when you, listen, I know who's working out. It's like when you see a girl at a gym.
Yeah.
You know who's there for dick.
Yeah.
And you know who's there to get in shape, okay?
Right, yeah.
And it's, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, there's the girl that has full makeup on.
Right.
Earphones.
Yeah.
Tits are out.
Yeah, she's wearing a push-up
bra. Stomach is out. Yeah, push-up bra.
On a treadmill.
The fucking yoga pants with the monkey on the fire. Like it's coming through the pants. And I did like the bike.
Yeah.
And look at that phone, and you want to go up to them and go, listen, either suck a dick or get the fuck off the bike. You're wasting. So there's a fat fuck somewhere dying of a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to give a guy on the treadmill an actual heart attack.
Oh, my God.
Just looking at you on the bike.
So back to acting in Emerson. So once you and this guy broke up, you said, fuck acting.
Yeah. And this isn't like, listen, I still talk to this guy. This was a relationship where it was like, you know, it was when it was over, it was like two boxers that were too exhausted to keep fighting. You know what I mean? So, and, you know, he's not, I don't know how he's doing now. We haven't talked in a long time, but he's like, he's a sad person. My heart goes out to him, you know, but like when it was over, I was just like, I gotta get out of this world. Like, I don't like these people. And he was a fucking actor who was a boxer. And like, yeah, just complete, like, delusional. And I just decided, like, fuck this. I can't do this anymore. I started doing comedy. I was like, this is the kind of...
In Boston. Did you ever get on stage?
In New York. Okay. I started in New York. And I loved it. Like, I loved the whole world of it. I didn't even know how miserable I should have been because that's how much I liked it. Because I was out there, I remember it was like the polar vortex, and I was out there barking every night to do shows at the Lantern. And then went from the Lantern to LOL, which is basically the Ha. And the Ha, if you don't know, is like it was like a real shitty scam for people in Times Square. Like, people would be walking by and other people would be like, hey, Chris Rock's on stage. And then they'd go up to this room and they'd get charged $8 for like tap water. And then I'd come out, you know, so like the audiences hated me. And the relationship was antagonistic from the beginning. So now as a comic, that's like how I came up. So that's sort of my relationship to the audience a little bit is like I'm ready for... Like, when somebody throws something or somebody flips out on stage, my heart soars. Like, it's like, that's my favorite thing, is when shit goes off the rails. And there was something about that felt like live theater because it was so, but it was more raw than that because it was a real thing that was happening and we were all in it together, You know, like the audience is as much a part of the show as the comic, and it's a relationship, you know? So there were things from acting that I could incorporate into stand-up, but it was all my words. It was what I wanted to talk about. I could get up whenever I wanted. Nobody had to give me permission. I could just fucking go and do it. So I just did it every night for 2 years. I think I went on stage every single night. And I just, and here I am. It's like, it's been 6 years. So.
And then, so you also did a lot of theater in college.
Yeah, I did theater.
Do you miss it?
Yeah, I do a little bit.
Do you ever think like maybe I'll do an off Broadway play?
I wouldn't do I would do a Broadway play, okay. But I wouldn't do a fucking, you know. It's like I look at it now and I go, I would love to do that again if I was given like a script that was by one of my favorite fucking writers, you know, like Edward Albee or David Mamet or something, you know, like if there was a play of theirs on stage, I would absolutely do that shit. But the problem with acting is there's not that much out there that's really good. And that was my problem. I was like, I want to make something myself. And I don't know that any of my shit is going to be better than this, but I know that it'll be mine. So if I'm tanking, it's my fault. You know,
again, something I'm really jealous of is theater. Like, that's another thing that I always wanted to have a tentacle.
Yeah.
That was another one of my little pet peeves. And
yeah,
I got into a play here. I finally, something came up and the pieces fell together.
Yeah.
And some guy approached me at the store and we did a couple rehearsals and we did a table read and they didn't get the financing. So I kind of broke my heart.
Yeah.
It was a dumb fucking play anyway. And then I did a play that was pretty decent. I auditioned for it and booked it.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to rehearse every fucking day.
Yeah.
And once we started doing performances were Wednesday with a Sunday matinee, which I can't fucking even think of doing because who the fuck is going to a dark theater on a Sunday at 2
right.
in L.A.?
Yeah.
I could see New York in the winter
yeah.
when it's fucking gloomy gusts outside.
Yeah.
But here, when it's 80 degrees, oh, you're not going to believe what we're doing today.
Especially when you can make that money, the money that you'd make in a week of rehearsals for a show, you'd make in one night on the road. Like, the money.
When I found out the work that went into a play, I was like, no.
Yeah.
That's never going to happen. And then they actually approached me with a play from Lincoln Center.
Right.
The guy saw me in the movie and he goes, you're perfect.
Yeah.
From one of the passengers. Let me connect you with my assistant. This went on. I was headed to New York, but it was kind of a musical.
Yeah.
And I was 300 pounds. I didn't know how good I could move.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have to dance a lot. It was like one or two scenes I had.
Yeah.
But they told me the rehearsal schedule.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it was the dead of the winter. Like, I was going to be doing all this in February in New York. I know New York in February.
It's a fucking brutal wasteland.
And now I see it. Right now, as we speak, I'm working on a one-man show.
Mm-hmm.
I've always loved that.
Yeah.
I've always.
That's great.
That's what I always.
Where are you going to do it? Do you know?
Right now, I'm just working on it at the store.
I got
three more fucking workouts left before I even put 2 hours together. It have to be 2 hours or less.
Right.
And then my hope would be to put it somewhere in town, somewhere cute, nice, mm-hmm. maybe a 99-seater, and do like a three-week run.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Cut it and then take it to off Broadway.
Off?
Off Broadway.
Yeah. Take it to off Broadway.
Let's take it to off Broadway. Again,
yeah.
And do a 3 or 4 week run, add some final adjustments, find a good director.
Right.
I would fucking give it a shot. Somewhere.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
I already know what scenes I want, what settings I want to sell.
Yeah.
I want a thing with a microphone.
Yeah.
And I just want like a street corner.
Yeah.
Those are the three settings, and I would just shine the light.
Yeah.
In each area, and I could go back and forth in between settings.
Yeah, because you got to, I mean, it's about your life, I'm assuming, yeah?
Yeah, it's about just the fucking hustle, the life,
yeah.
You know, how I even, you know, look at how the fuck did we stumble upon this crazy art?
Right.
How the fuck do we stumble?
I always feel like there has to be a lot of, you know, not that I regret anything I've ever done, but there's got to be a lot of mistakes to get you into comedy. You have to make a lot of fucked up shit that has to happen. Something is off, you know, with comics that I've noticed in a beautiful way. Like I trust a comic. If I meet somebody across, you know, if I'm overseas and I meet somebody and they're a comic, there's something automatically that there's an ease. I can communicate shit to them that I wouldn't say to anybody else. It's like meeting another drug addict or like another alcoholic or something. You know, there's something there. Like we've been through it together, even if I've never met them before.
I feel the same way sometimes. I've always known one thing. Listen, when a person wants to think of what we do, like you, this whole thing started with me when somebody brought up the Joker.
Yeah.
That all started with that whole Joker. And I saw the Joker.
Yeah.
And I thought about fucking the early years of comedy, your career. Like,
yeah.
They're not fun.
No.
It's an abusive relationship. It's right. It's a one-way relationship. You know? It's just abusive. And what you know, you were involved in an abusive relationship. What does it take to say that's it?
Yeah.
You know, so there's 4 or 5 years, 3 years for some people who they stumble along. They just stumble along. And then when they get it, they catch on. And you progress. You know what? For some people, it takes 11 months. And for some people, it takes 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
For me, it took 3.5 years to finally go, oh, this is what needs to be done.
Right.
This is how it needs to be done.
And how old were you when you started?
When I first got on stage, I was 28 years old.
Yeah, so you were older, too.
I was older. I was 28 when I first got on stage. It took me a good, honest 14 months of procrastination.
Yeah.
14 months of procrastination.
Yeah. Before you got on again?
That's just horrible. No. Like to go, I'm going to become a stand-up comic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd set up an open mic.
Yeah.
And I'd cancel that night at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
No ideas. I got the flu. I mean, this just went on.
Yeah.
There was just this fucking, you know.
Yeah, I cried the first time before I went and did my first mic. I cried outside and was like, called up a friend who was a stand-up and I was like, I can't do it. And he was like, all right, don't do it. And I was like, but then I'll never do it. I almost wanted him to talk me into it. And then I realized he wasn't going to. And I was like, oh, I just want to do this. I'll just shut up and go inside. But like, yeah, it's hard.
The realizations.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, and for me now, like with this one-man show, what the final messages that I'm trying to bring is that I didn't become a comic. Comedy made me a man. It really made me a man. It really made me a fucking man. It made me see a lot of things, you know. It let me see vulnerabilities in people.
Yeah.
Vulnerabilities in women in comedy, what we do in the beginning that we think back that I shouldn't have fucking slept with her or,
right. You
know, all those things. And
It
was this thing has been a journey for me.
Yeah.
And I want to explain the journey to people as best as like, but I ain't got enough time.
Yeah.
This journey has been tremendous.
Yeah.
This 28 years has been tremendous. You know, I told, we were driving back last night from Fresno and Miss You came on from the Rolling Stones.
Mm-hmm.
And I told George Perez, who I was working with, this came out in the seventh when I was in the eighth grade.
Yeah.
This was the song of the summer of the eighth grade. In 1978, would I think that in 2020, I'd be driving home from a theater in Fresno as a stand-up comic listening to this song?
Yeah.
Also, Human League came on, Don't You Want Me, Baby?
Right.
Shit. And I was like,
crying.
This song is going to be 38 years old.
Yeah.
If I would have known that summer of 82 that I'd be in a fucking doing stand, I had no idea.
Yeah.
This is why this is shocking to me. And obviously, neither did you.
Yeah.
And obviously, in a way, neither did Lee.
Yeah.
Like, we started out, Lee wanted to be a fucking editor. We went to school, he was going to be an editor. You went to major in theater.
Yeah.
And what were your plans really from there? To move to New York and
do theater.
Fucking theater.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. and moved to New York. I was like, I'm going to be a theater actor. That's what I want. And like I did an off-Broadway, I did a couple off-Broadway plays, a bunch of off-Broadway plays. I did some independent films. And I just, like, I look back at it now, I'm like, that shit was ridiculous. It was like for the birds. I mean, once I did comedy, I've never been obsessed with anything like this in my life.
Did you fall in love with it?
Yeah.
Was it like a heroin for you?
100%. How many years? I hid it from my family.
How many years did you do comedy before you quit drinking?
I quit drinking before I started comedy. Thank
really?
God. Yeah.
Knock on wood, man.
Yeah, thank God.
Okay, so nobody.
Because I wouldn't have been able to fucking quit if I was doing comedy, I don't think. I genuinely don't think.
And how
could.
Do you go to meetings and stuff? And
yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah,
good
I go
for
to the
you.
Meetings. Yeah.
So when you walk into a bar, any problem, when you see a fucking...
Been so long now. It's like when I go to meetings, it's really more for just so I don't act like an asshole. Like I don't, when I see a drink, I don't want to drink. Forget other people are drinking. I don't like, it's not like a part of my radar, you know? So it doesn't bother me at all. I just like, it's just not part of my life anymore.
So you did all these, you've done 6 years of comedy in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're out here, Bill Putsch on his show, Ringers, and mm-hmm. what else is going on?
I'm starting a podcast. The teaser drops tomorrow, January 20th, and it's called Devil's Advocate with Rosebud Baker.
Okay.
And it's basically like interviews with other comics about what's funny about like the worst things that happen to us. Because I always find my humor is a little dark, or people say it's dark. I don't see it that way, but people say it's dark, and... But I think the dark things are funny, and I think they're part of what make us funny. So it's really kind of answering that question, you know? And then at the end of every episode, we give a bunch of bad advice to listeners.
Bad advice.
Bad advice. Because one thing that annoys me about the internet now is everyone's a fucking pro. Everyone's a life coach, you know? And it's like, who the fuck wanted what you've got? Like, who said they want what you have?
It's crazy.
You know?
Or prove you have what you say you have.
Yeah. Like, I look at these it's people, crazy. I'm like, if you think that you're, like, in a position to tell other people what to do, you're fucking delusional.
There's a chick I follow just for that.
Yeah.
I follow probably 20 people.
Just because you hate them?
No, they're just delusional.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I want to.
They make you laugh.
They make me laugh, plus I don't want to do what they're doing.
Yeah.
I know whatever the fuck they're doing is completely wrong. So I don't want
to like,
do
thank you for being
doing.
An example to
thank
me.
Thank you for being an example.
Of the wrong things.
You really do it with the wrong things.
Yeah.
And why would I fucking,
Well, do you run into that, Joey?
What's that?
Because you're very positive online, and I don't put you in that category, but there are people who are like, oh, you got to hustle today, and... It kind of like it just rubs me the wrong way. You for whatever reason you found a way to do it without rubbing people like the wrong way.
Well, because I explained to people. First of all, when I write those things in the morning, that's exactly what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it feels when like you're almost talking to yourself.
I am a fucking, you know, and I knew, and I knew, you know, just for number one, I'm very lazy by nature. If it was up to me
too.
I would stay on that couch all day.
Yeah.
What's my dream job? If I could stay on a couch and not get fat.
Yeah.
And eat like...
everything.
Tom and Jerry's New York Super Fudge Chunk with
yeah.
Coca-Cola in it and watch like old Honeymooners.
Yeah.
And I would just go through a series. Like I'm the type of guy that would just go from The Sopranos, Sons of Anarchy.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Back to The Sopranos.
I've watched The Sopranos five fucking times.
I'm one of those assholes.
Yeah.
It goes around and around and around.
Yeah.
I have things that, if you would Chinese food every day
yeah.
from a certain restaurant in New York, I could do that.
I do mozzarella sticks like a motherfucker.
I'm one of those people that could do the same shit over and over and over again in a controlled setting
yeah.
and be very happy if I don't have to spread myself.
So, right.
My mother died at a young age.
Mm-hmm. How old?
At 16. So,
oh, wow.
I threw a pity party like everybody else does
yeah.
when we lose a relative. And then you add drugs to that.
Yeah.
That if you add drugs to that pity party, last forever, and it can really take you down.
Yeah.
It's a really bad
pity. Dude, my sister died when I was 17.
I'm very sad.
So it was like, you start to...
It's a pity party.
Yeah.
It's a fucking pity party. Yeah. And then we create our own pity party, and it's actually like, it gets to the point where like, hey, Lee, how you doing? Rosebud. I don't know if you know, Rosebud lost his sister at 17. Like, you start wearing it like a badge of honor.
Yeah.
And I saw myself doing that. You know what? Here it is, plain and simple. So your fucking mother died.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry she died. The world is sorry. But at the same time,
right,
this is not going to work. This is not acceptable.
Yeah.
You sit there and cry. Because this is what I'll do. In my mind, I'll sit there and cry. I'm a crier.
Yeah.
I won't tear up. I'll watch TV. When I was 18 and 19 and 27, and then I got locked up and I came out and I was 30, there was things nobody wants to do.
Right.
I don't want to do none.
Yeah.
I don't want to do none.
Yeah.
I don't want to do nothing. I don't want to do it. But then you have to force yourself to do it.
Yeah, you learn how to. I feel like when you go through death at a young age, there's something about it that makes you, it teaches you how to parent yourself. Because you grow so much so fast, like within a day. Like you got the day before, your sister's there, your mom's there. The next day, they're gone. You're 10 years older, like right away.
Well, it lets you appreciate the day more. Mm-hmm. It makes you be a better person to people because you don't know if that's the last time you ever see them again.
Right.
When I see somebody,
I can't say that I'm a better person to people, but
yeah, no.
I try to be.
You know, it gave me all those insecurities of, but it also, I'm sick and tired of hearing excuses, Jack.
Yeah.
And I'm the type of guy, before your excuse comes out, I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah.
And what the, you know, I want you to understand how fucking fortunate you are.
Right.
You know, it's like that comic that says to you, fuck, I got an audition tomorrow at 11:30, but I got to go to a 1 o'clock spot at the comedy, what's the hot club in New York?
The Cellar.
The Cellar.
Yeah.
You want to smack that comic.
Right.
I got an audition at 11.
It's like, oh, is your crown too heavy?
But my fucking, I got a 1 o'clock. And guess who said that to themselves a bunch of times?
Yeah. Yeah, same.
I got a 1 o'clock at the fucking store, which means 1:30, and now I got to get up at 11 and be prepared for an audition? Right. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Joey, what the fuck? You're doing spots at the world famous comedy store, okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There are people that'll cut a finger off. There are comics that'll cut a pinky off. There are women that would suck your dick to do a spot at the comedy store at 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
What are you crying about? And I think that that was just for the store. I'm just talking for comedy.
Right.
But for my life, I would have to like beat myself up in the morning. Like when I was 21 and I had a job at a hardware store delivering plumbing supplies.
Yeah.
At 7:30 in the morning, the things I would have to tell myself in the shower.
Right.
Would be frightening for me to get motivated.
Yeah.
It wasn't nothing nice.
No, it's like, wasn't like you just hate yourself into action in a way.
You hate yourself into fucking action. Like, you know what? Ain't nobody going to give you a fuck.
Right.
Your mother's dead. You got dick. You got dicked in the ass. Now get up.
Right.
Do something about it. Go take that dick out of your ass. That's how you have to talk to people.
I thought about it. I was like, I remember I was in therapy and I was like bitching about my childhood. And my therapist said to me, he's like, hey, you know, childhood was a game and you lost. That's it. You don't get to play again. You're an adult now. That's it. Just go on. And I remember hearing him say that fucking changed my life. Like, I think about that all the time when I hear adults talk about, and like, it's funny, like if we look at the reasons why we do things now and like how they correlate to our childhood, as long as we're not blaming our childhood, you know, because I think you gotta kind of understand why those experiences shaped you, but you can't use them as an excuse.
Absolutely.
Like, it's not, you're a fucking adult. This is a new game. You got to start over. You didn't beat the boss, but you were given a new level anyway. So just fucking take it. Like, see what you're going to do with this one.
You know, I think that when we become comics, you have to realize when you become a real comic, for you to do what we do, I assume the wiring isn't right somewhere.
Mm.
Not that we're going to kill somebody or strap a bomb on ourselves.
No.
Somewhere along the line, you know, like comics have told me, there's 2 million doctors, there's 150,000 comedians.
Right.
It's not, you know, nobody drives up to an open mic in a Bentley.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, right.
It's something that somewhere along the line, you just, and I see the drop off rate, but you see the, you know,
yeah.
I can't, I've been here 22 years, 23, February 19th. I can't tell you how many stars I've seen come and gone.
Yeah.
Stars. There was comedy stars.
Right.
Gone. They're selling real estate. They moved back. This is not a.
Yeah. And they're happier.
Yeah. They're happier, whatever. I'm happy with what I'm doing because it was either this or slinging coke in New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those were my two options. I wasn't going to have a day job.
Right.
That was never going to happen.
Yeah.
I may have a little night job.
Yeah.
I didn't want to work in a bar. I didn't want to get out. I was no tough guy. I didn't want to be a door guy and get beat up. That's a,
yeah.
You know, being a door guy is like being a woman that marches. It gets you nowhere.
Right.
You know, it gets you nowhere. You can march till you're 80.
Sure, right, you get yeah. a hat out of it.
Right, yeah. Good, right, yeah. Keep marching. We're back. We're black. We're strong. All right. You got it.
Yeah.
That's what I haven't heard before. We're black. We're back. We're strong.
Yeah, whatever. It's always something. You know what I'm saying? It's always something. We're gay. We want to get paid. Something. No. It's always a bitch.
Yeah.
So you've been doing comedy 6 years now.
Yeah.
And when did things start popping for you?
About a year and a half ago.
You started making things pop on
yeah.
your own?
Well, I started, I did this documentary that Amazon Prime, or Amazon Video produced. It was called Inside Jokes, and it was about comics trying to get into JFL. So there were like six of us. We were all auditioning, and it went from callbacks to the auditions to, you know, all of it to the festival. And there were some that didn't get picked. There were some that did. And I was one of the ones that was fortunate to go to Montreal and to do New Faces. And then when that dropped, it was, I guess, November of 2018. And while I was at New Faces, I got my manager at Levity. And ever since then, things have kind of like slowly started picking up. I got the Comedy Central Digital thing. I got Bill Burr's The Ringers. And then I got a thing coming out later this year that Will Smith produced. So, and, you know, my podcast now, my own podcast. It's like things are just starting to like.
You were doing a podcast with somebody else before.
Uh-huh. Corinne Fisher.
Okay.
She has the Guys We Fucked podcast. And then we had our podcast was called Two Less Lonely Girls. It was about celebrity stalking. We stalked Justin Bieber. And we found him. And we found his girlfriend's house. And we, like, interviewed people standing outside of his girlfriend's house. It was about, like, celebrity worship and pop culture. And had this kind of, like, dark twist to it. So, and we just put that on hiatus. We might go back to it. I'm not really sure.
Is there a case pending or something?
No. No.
Did you get to talk to Justin Bieber?
Yeah, I did. I got to talk to him.
Really?
Yeah. It's all on my Instagram, like the whole, like, me hearing where he was and then going to chase him down. And then I followed him for like 3 miles. And like, he was, this was before he got married to Haley. And
what year was this?
It was 2000. I guess it was 2017.
When was he around here?
He lives here.
Okay, because there
and
was a
Canada.
Time, there was a time when he was always at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
Cheering somebody on.
Who Chris.
D'Elia.
Chris D'Elia.
Chris D'Elia.
Yeah, that's his favorite comic.
Right. And
yeah.
Then I saw him one time maybe as I was getting to the Comedy Store. There was an explosion on Sunset. And it's one of his fucking bat cars.
Yeah.
Because he just can't have like a Volkswagen.
Dude, his cars are constantly breaking down. He loves cars. He doesn't know anything about them. He gets the most expensive cars,
right.
And then they're breaking down somewhere.
This thing went like bah!
All the time.
Like,
yeah,
this thing made like a fucking like a what do you call that when the muffler shoots back? Like
backfire.
It's like a fucking backfire.
Yeah,
and then he took off like he missed a gear.
Yeah,
and somebody goes, "That was Justin Bieber. You just missed Justin Bieber." I'm like, I never see that motherfucker nowhere. Everybody's seen him. That was it. I just heard about him driving around.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Justin. He's not a great driver, but he loves fucking, he loves his cars. He just doesn't know about them. And he says that. He's like, I don't know about them, but I really like them.
He just walks into a, place and buys a fucking.
Yeah. He's a fucking billionaire.
How crazy is that?
It's nuts. It's nuts. But I really like him. I don't know what, I truly am like a fan of his. There's something about him.
Is the music good?
Yeah, I like his music. I mean, he had Purpose came out like 2-3 years ago. I don't know how many years ago, but Purpose came out. That was a fucking great album. But it annoyed me because that was when people started being like, wow, he's really good. And I was like, no, he's been good. He's been good since he was a fucking 8-year-old, you know? Like,
so he's been singing since he was 8?
Yeah, he started in Canada.
On YouTube, singing. Usher found him.
Yeah, he was on fucking YouTube. Usher found him and Scooter Braun. And then he like just fucking catapulted to fame. He was just a kid that was playing guitar on like the sidewalks.
I don't know nothing. Like, yeah. I don't know nothing. I know Justin Bieber. I know chicks run after him.
Yeah.
I know he was on the 101. Then, did he do drugs and go off the deep end for a few weeks?
Yeah.
Right. A couple of years.
Yeah.
Him and Demi Lovato were fucking exchanging texts and shit.
For sure.
You know, this world.
They have the same manager now.
Is that what it is? See? Fuck.
Yeah.
I'm like a Houdini without the Houdini. You look at that guy.
Holy shit. So, was that the whole podcast, Justin Bieber?
It was Justin Bieber centered.
Let's do the next one, has to be just let's. Let's just bust fucking Alec Baldwin's balls. Like,
yeah.
Like that. That's a podcast I would very much be interested in doing.
Yeah.
You just torture Alec Baldwin.
Just torture Alec Baldwin like fucking.
Yeah.
Every day.
Something.
He fucking takes it well, though. He seems to.
No, not the shit we're going to do to him. Not the shit we're going to do to him. I mean, we're going to get deep, deep, deep into his psychological mind. Like, you have no
into
idea.
His anger.
Oh, like, you have no fucking
I feel like
idea.
You can break Alec Baldwin. Like, I he seems like a nice guy. I don't know.
Listen.
But I feel like you could, like, if you, like, I just imagine you at his coffee shop every day for a year. Like, just bugging him. Like, hey, Alec, how you doing? And then he leaves, and suddenly, like, you're in, like, his, like, dry cleaners.
You gotta let me come when you do it, because I fucking wrote for that roast, and I have a ton of Alec Baldwin jokes that didn't get picked.
There's a story that... Alec Baldwin, I told it on here before. Alec Baldwin got a play in New York opposite Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
The controversy and everything.
Yeah, I forget. Oh, what happened? They got into some sort of...
Right, because
Shia
LaBeouf is a professional and Alec Baldwin wouldn't be off book.
Right.
For like the first fucking day.
Right.
Alec Baldwin shows up and he's got a script and Shia LaBeouf's like, time out. What's with the fucking script?
Yeah.
And he goes, well, we're just getting started. He goes, no, you got to be off book, bro.
Yeah.
And can you imagine? Like, and Alec Baldwin was like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
He goes, I'll let you know who the fuck am I. You know, from now on, just make sure you're on off fucking book.
Yeah.
You're a professional here. So, like, the next day he wasn't on book and he was pissed.
Yeah.
So, Shia LaBeouf started, I guess, that Monday he taught a master acting class at NYU, and Shia LaBeouf showed up, and he put up his hand, and he asked the question. He goes, what do you tell an actor who's not prepared? You like that type of shit.
Wow.
And then again,
he took trolling to a new fucking level. Yeah, he showed up.
The guy had to call the producer and say, what do I do with this kid? We're going to have to get smacked. Then the next night, he took it deeper. Fucking Alec Baldwin gets out of his house, out of his car, and he goes up to this building, and there's Shia LaBeouf with a script. Don't forget. Tomorrow, you better be prepared. Like,
holy fuck.
Yeah, that's it. Like, we'll do shit to you. Like, I'm into...
But that's like a... That's like... That's like a mentally ill level of fucking trolling.
The name
like,
of the show is up, Mental Warfare.
To show up at somebody's house and be like, you gotta do this. Don't forget. It's almost like he was fucking poking him until... He was poking the bear.
There's only one show.
He was definitely poking the bear.
There's only one show. Well, that's what it means to some people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you eat, like, I'm a New Yorker. If you put ketchup on your hot dog, I will get up and walk away from you.
Right.
And then I'll pay a Puerto Rican to go in there and stab you for $20.
Yeah.
Like, you're in New York. You want to eat fucking ketchup on a hot dog, do it in Iowa. You're part-time. Don't do it here in New York.
Yeah.
Like, I'm old school.
Yeah.
Like, I'm old school like that. I let shit slide. I just don't talk to people.
They don't even put it on burgers in
people know you're not even allowed to have ranch at my table.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even want, if you eat ranch, like, listen, sit over there with your friends and right. jump up and down. And
like, and it's a children's birthday like, party.
I am dead serious.
Yeah.
Hummus, hummus, you bring hummus to my house, you see what happens. Show up at my house with hummus. Let me go to your house and let this be hummus and chips. And that falafel bread. I'll fucking throw
turn your
fit.
Face into hummus.
I go to your house and it's like olives. What happened to the fucking onion dip? What happened to the onion dip? Old America. Let's go. Chop, chop.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, the onion
like,
dip.
I'm old school, so I get it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm old school. When I see a light, I get off out of respect. Mm-hmm. I don't run the fucking light.
Right.
So I expect the same respect from you. So if yeah. I come to watch you and I'm following you two nights in a row, after four nights of running the life of 15 minutes,
yeah.
I got to say something to you.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to get on top of you.
Right.
And then we're going to have to duke it the fuck out.
Right.
And then I'm going to go up there and bust you in the head with the microphone at the 18-minute mark. Because there's some people who just, but that's a show. That's the only show I would consider doing. I would have to get independent investors to just do it.
And just go after Alex.
Torture level. No. I wouldn't go after Alex. I would do what I was doing in Colorado in 83. I'd pick a guy, and I'd fucking make his life hell.
Wait.
There was a guy, when I worked at the Tower restaurant.
Yeah, I'm like, give me the story behind this.
This is the first time anybody's going to hear this story, because I just did, last Wednesday, I did the one-man show, and it was covering that time of my life.
Right.
And I remember starting to write this and going, I don't even have time.
Yeah.
This is a two-hour story on its own. The guy, I got hired at the Tower restaurant as a fucking dishwasher.
Yeah.
Tuesdays, I knew a guy from New York, and he goes, dog, I always see you lifting weights and hitting the bag. You want some protein? He goes, I need a dishwasher on Tuesdays. It's prime rib night.
Uh-huh.
And I'll give you all the mistakes.
All right.
So I said, okay. And it was like $8.50 an hour. I don't know what it was. It didn't really matter. And there was, he was always really cool to me. He would give me shrimp and whatever. And I only worked Tuesdays and maybe Fridays. I had the job like maybe Tuesdays and Sundays. It was like I was 19.
Yeah.
And there was a chef that was just a scumbag.
Yeah.
Like he'd wear the fucking hat and the whole thing. And he would yell at the wait staff and call waitresses cons and shit.
Yeah.
But he was also a part-time coke dealer.
Uh-huh. So many fucking chefs.
So we would, some nights, I didn't like the guy. He was from somewhere. He was from, like, California.
Yeah.
But he was very white privileged.
Yeah.
And he was very high and mighty. And mm-hmm. for some reason, because the coke era, everybody kissed his ass. At that time in my life, I was playing a kid that didn't do coke because I was taking down drug dealers.
Mm-hmm.
So I would want, I smoked pot.
Yeah.
But I didn't do coke. And it was well known in the parties when I would go. People would go, he doesn't snort.
Yeah.
And I'd have an eight ball in my pocket. But they, I swear to God, I lived that double life.
Yeah.
For 9 months.
Yeah.
Because that was my intention, to rob these guys.
Right.
But this guy took a special interest in, because he was just a scumbag.
Right.
And because I worked with
you're
him,
like, I'm going to enjoy this one.
I'm going to enjoy this one. So I kicked it up. I started working like Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays.
Yeah.
Just so I could watch him more and hear his schedule.
Yeah.
Then I would just destroy
casing him.
Then I would just destroy him. This was way before The Ring or anybody ever thought about putting cameras.
Yeah.
I fucking got a tool and I busted into his house. And I wouldn't steal all the coke. I would take some of it just to cause a rift between him and his roommate.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
just enough to see him walk into work a little fucking ruffled.
Yeah, just enough. And then
this
went on for 4 months.
Yeah.
Because he was a skier. If you're a coke dealer, you can't ski. You got to be watching your staff.
I don't
know. Especially with Uncle Joey's in the neighborhood. they laid me off from the electrician company for the holidays. So I collected unemployment. But the building needed a snow shoveler in Snowmass Village. Paid $15 an hour cash. 3-4 hours of snow shoveling, I'd go home. I told his name was Joe Coffey. I got to go. Where you going? I got to go. That's it. I would just do it to case out the drug dealers to see what time the drug dealers would leave, because they all lived in the same complex.
Yeah.
From like D to H.
Right.
And I fucking, but this guy was a special case. I wanted to fuck with him. Mm-hmm. Like, I would steal one ski pole.
He just starts thinking he has Alzheimer's.
Oh, my God. I was fucking with him.
Yeah.
I would go to his house. I would take an ounce of Coke that he had was fresh. I would cut it.
Yeah.
And then I would take half out and put it in a spot completely different than where he had put it.
And you were like the Chinese water torture of fucking theft.
And then I would go back to his house with him afterward with 10 other people, and I would watch him looking around like, where did I put that Coke?
Right.
And I knew where, like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And it was my hatred for him.
Yeah.
Like, he was such a prick to the waitresses and the busboys. He didn't fuck with me. I think he fucked with me one day, and I mouthed off to him, and that was the end of it. He knew I was from a different planet.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm going to leave this guy alone. I did something else to him. Like, I did little things. I would steal his skis. Then I would bring him back.
Yeah.
So do you still want to fuck with drug dealers on this show, or no? It could just be regular people.
No, regular people.
Okay.
You could just do it to regular people that's sitting at the house. And now it could be great because they can hear voices.
Yeah.
That's where I come in.
Yeah.
That's where I come
in. We can have, like, people set their friends up. Like, we're, you know, like, on, like, morning radio, like, when, like, listen, someone...
Like, if you want
if Joey's voice came into my house all of a sudden...
No, but it wouldn't be my voice, because then you'd fucking know. So, like, for me, my mother died.
Yeah.
So I'd be sitting in my living room, and all of a sudden, like, I hear, like, some lady going,
oh,
Santo.
Oh, no, you're going to go that dark?
Oh, like, my God. Oh, yeah.
And you're looking around.
Yeah.
And, you know, but... Like, it would be torturing people in their own home.
Yes.
Like, them going for their pillow and it's missing. And
yeah.
And then putting it back, stealing their glasses, taking their car.
You'd have a lot of women just wondering if they were pregnant. They'd just be like, I can't remember anything.
I would take his car
and
move it to a different building and then put the keys back in the fucking ring. I was driving this guy mental. I was going and I stole his chef book.
Oh,
like,
shit.
He had a book of recipes. I stole it and threw it away. Like, this was never ending. It was like a 3-month torture chamber of this guy.
Yeah.
And I knew that he would come out at night. We would all be playing darts, and he'd always look at his bag of Coke and go, what the fuck? And I knew that him and his roommate would get into arguments. I remember still being in there with 3 or 4 drug dealers were like, we got to figure out who's robbing us. And I'd be sitting there going, man, it's fucked up, isn't it? Like, I would feed them.
I'm surprised you didn't move in with him.
Like. And there was one kid, I can't remember what his name was. He was a nice kid. I kind of liked him. He was from Mankato, Minnesota. He was really from Minneapolis. He was a good-looking kid, but nobody liked him. He was a part-time coke fiend.
Yeah.
So one day, somebody actually said, we think it's him. And I was like, it could be.
Oh, my God.
I threw him under the bus.
Holy shit.
I was such a dirty dog up there.
Fuck.
It was.
Fuck.
That's the show I want to do. If I ever get back, if they would let me torture one person. But I would. It would be like torture that you've never seen before.
Yeah. You'd have to get like the background info for why they deserve it. You know?
No, like, oh, I got 3 people in mind already. That would just
you should get
not your own enemies.
You
know?
This is like the opposite of Queer Eye. This is like somebody reaches out to you. One of their loved ones is like, hey, my husband's a piece of shit. Or like, you know, my wife's being a real cunt. She's like,
wife is cheating on me.
Yeah, she's cheating. Whatever, like anything. And then you get that and they bring Joey in to fuck with them. And change their fucking lives, you know?
You know, like, if you're cheating on your wife, I'll go to the hotel room and knock on the door and run away.
Yeah.
Or leave a note on the door, I'm watching you.
Yes.
You know, shit like that.
Yeah.
Like, the funniest thing I ever did was about 6 months ago. Fucking Rogan was at war with, what's his name? The guy
6 months ago?
Yeah, about 6 months ago, a year ago, Alex Jones was talking about Joe Rogan.
Oh.
So I took like a fortune cookie piece of paper.
Yeah.
And I wrote, I'm watching. And I put it in Joe Rogan's windshield wiper at the store. Like, I'm one of those dudes.
That's fucking great.
So I'll play with your paranoia.
Yeah.
Like, I'll play with
that's you. Fucking dark.
Could you do it if they knew that it was coming? Like, I'm trying to think how we get around this legally. Because you're going to send people to therapy. I was like, what if it's like a like one of those TV court shows.
Right.
And like they could agree, like you could owe them $10,000, no, or no. Joey's gonna torture you for a right. week, a month.
My job is to put you either to make you go to the police and tell them somebody's following you.
Yeah.
To make you go to an insane asylum.
Yeah.
Or tell them that you're hearing voices.
Yeah.
Like, that's the main thing.
When that's beautiful.
I keep hearing Chinese music. Like in the middle of the night, just put Chinese music in your house. You know, we have our own little personal speaker that we've already got in there rigged.
Yeah. Or you like old timey radio. That would freak me the fuck out.
You go food shopping. I know you love orange juice. Every right? time you go food shopping, I steal the orange juice.
Yeah.
You know, what happened to my orange juice? No, no. You do that to somebody for fucking a year. They really start to doubt themselves.
Yeah.
Like season one is a year.
That's
like,
the fabric of their reality.
No. Season one would just be misplacing things around his house.
Yeah.
Taking his car at yeah. night, parking on the next block over.
Just see what happens as their fucking psyche starts
from Amazon. Now you could send people boxes from Amazon.
Yeah.
And do the transaction so they think they actually did it at what time from their computer. So they call customer service, and customer service is like, wait a second, Mr. Syatt, we just spoke to you about an hour ago. You said you wanted the chair. You said you wanted the wig. I didn't want no wig.
What if you could really actually get into their phone, so when they call customer service, it's you, or,
no,
like, or yeah. not you, but it's but me with you no, in my it's ear. Me. Yeah. It's you with, like, it's like someone, like an actor.
Years ago, there was a guy that I worked with that was losing his mind because he was going bald.
Right.
I had grown up with a guy. That really went through. Today, I think about that guy, and I think of how much he suffered at the age of 19.
Mm-hmm.
He went through hell. He went, spray painting his head.
Yeah.
He went through the whole thing. I think he finally did the shave the hair from my back and crazy glue it on your head thing.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck he did. He looked terrible.
Yeah.
But in 87, 89, when I got released from prison, I got a job selling Mitsubishis with the whitest, most uptight dude you ever met in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could tell this guy had never fucked a woman from behind, like,
right.
doggy style. He always fucked military position.
Right.
He looked straight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He didn't talk during sex. You're like, you like it, babe? And he went,
mm-hmm.
I'm focusing. You know, he was one of those assholes.
Yeah.
But one day he told us in a meeting, like, he goes, it's hard for me to really be a good salesman because I feel insecurity because of my male pattern baldness. That was it. He was a good salesman, too.
Yeah.
Like, in life, he was a good salesman. So I was always banging it out with him.
Yeah.
So I knew that I had the upper hand. The only upper hand I'd have was psychologically him torturing him about his head.
Yeah.
So I would put hats on his desk. I would fucking...
I love that.
I would go on the Yellow Pages and I would call like a men's wig replacement, whatever.
Yeah.
And I would go, hold on one second. My phone.
The best, though.
Can you call me back at this number? And I would give him the number.
Yeah.
And he would be outside with me, and all of a sudden the phone would ring. He'd walk in there. He'd pick up the phone. And I could see him through the glass. No, I didn't call you. No, I don't need no wig. And he just slammed the phone down. And then he'd walk outside me. What was that? Nothing.
Throw his sales off.
Oh, my God. I would send him brochures, some wigs for less.
That's the best. My boyfriend has a tremor. Like, his hand fucking shakes. And it just shakes all day. So I'll just record him trying to eat soup. And then just send it to him in the middle of the day for no reason.
It's
like my favorite thing to do.
Why does he have tremor? Is he off the
booth? I don't know. He's got a hereditary tremor. He's like, yeah, my dad has it. I have it. I was like, oh, I'm going to have so much fun with this. I asked him, I was like, hey, when you jerk off, do you finish too quick?
Because he's got that little tremor. Gives that little steak and shake to the helmet.
You know?
You should try that.
He's the only guy who finishes too quick when he's jerking off.
The tambourine at the same time. When you play the tambourine.
Not recently. God damn it, Jerry.
Oh, my God. So what do people call you? Rosebud?
They call me Rosebud.
When you sent me this, I thought it was like a put-on. Like, I'm like, this is some fucking hippie chick.
I know.
And then I saw you wearing a hippie chick. I'm like, what the fuck is she Rosebud for?
I know. They
Pick
call
a
me...
name, either Bud or Rose. and let's get the party started. What's with the Rosebud? Let's go. Come on. Let's do this shit.
They call me Rosebud. They call me Rosie. Those are the two.
I'll call you Rosie from now on.
Yeah. I like it when New Yorkers say it. Rosie, when a Midwesterner says it, just doesn't sound the same. It makes me sound like a different person. But when New Yorkers say Rosie, I feel like that name matches my personality, you know?
Where's your family at?
All over the place. My mom lives in Maine. My dad lives in D.C.
Okay, so
one sister in Boston, one sister in New York, one sister in Chicago.
And you've been in New York 6 years?
I've been in New York for 13 years.
13 years.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So you're just a New Yorker at this point.
Yeah.
You want to try it out here?
I want to try it, yeah. I don't know if I can. Like, I've been out here for the month so far, and it's like I love L.A. It's relaxing. It's nice to get away from New York. But I really just like you live in New York long enough and it's like it's like Shawshank. You know what I mean? You get out and you don't know how to live. It's a lifestyle there that I don't know. You have skills that you don't need outside of New York that nobody values outside of New York, but that you spent a lot of time cultivating because you lived there, you know? Like just shit that I learned in New York. Like, I know how to
walk around the rat.
Yeah.
When it pops out of
exactly.
An alley.
If a rat,
like, you know, not to yell.
I've had a rat touch my bare foot. All right. Whoa. That was a real thing that happened to me in New York. Nobody fucking helped, you know?
What was this?
This was in, I was on.
Well, were you a barefoot?
96th and Broadway.
Or you had
I was wearing sandals. They weren't flip flops. They were sandals. And I remember a fucking rat ran over my foot. I was like, do I cut it off? I didn't know what the fuck to do. I was like, I can't believe this just fucking happened. I just got like rat AIDS. I'm done. And nobody helped. Everyone saw it. No one helped.
It's just an everyday occurrence.
Yeah.
Did you ever wear sandals again?
No, never in my life. I haven't worn sandals since then in a city.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
No, you have to have, listen, my wife is talking about, you know, it's. We're alone out here. We have a 7-year-old. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting any younger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you sit around fucking Christmas. This place blows around Christmas.
But let me ask you something.
This place blows.
Why would you want to move to New York? Because
I would move to New York.
Oh, okay.
For starters, I would move back to Jersey.
That's fair.
All those guys, Florentine and mm-hmm. Fos, they do great.
Yeah.
They live out. They pick a three nights a week. They come into the city.
Yeah.
And the other four, they stay the fuck home.
And the seller fucking pays.
Yeah. There's a straight train that takes you in.
Yeah.
You know, she's looking at like Oradell. I could take a bus. But I say these things to you very loosely because in my heart, I don't think I could do it. I mean, I don't like driving no more.
Yeah.
This ruined me. Living out here really ruined what I enjoy doing.
This ride
this week in the Bakersfield was fun in Fresno.
Yeah, when there's no traffic, it's fun.
It's a great, you know, we got to see California is such a great state. We're just living here, and this is really hell. Yeah. Once you go north and you drive, you know, like I was worried all week that I was going to get snowed out of a gig in California on Friday and Saturday because it was supposed to get Thursday night, it was raining here.
Yeah.
We were supposed to get heavy snow up in the mountains.
Okay. Yeah.
And they closed the Grapevine. So if they closed the Grapevine,
then you're fucked.
How would I get up there? So I was already like panicking. Like if it does snow up there, do we leave at 11 in the morning? So it's just a 3-hour difference.
Right.
Where I was last week, it snowed in Calabasas.
Yeah.
We had to bring winter gear. You know, California is a very interesting
weird
state.
Yeah.
I told my wife, if we move to Jersey, it's work.
Yeah.
We got to get in that car and pick Mercy up at the fucking Catholic school and bring her back and karate and piano and this. So before we make the move, you better fucking think about it.
Like, yeah.
I can't make a move at 60.
Right.
You know, so I don't know what I want to do. But right now, somewhere along the line, you know, you think of all these places to retire to.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a low state tax or whatever. But do you really want to live there? Are you going to be happy there?
Yeah.
Or are you going to go there
and die? That's what it comes down to.
That's what it comes down to.
The everyday shit.
I've
always loved visiting L.A., but once I'm here for a long period of time, I start feeling trapped real quick. I start feeling really trapped. Like everything. I don't know, at least in New York, like, I can get out of my house, I can just go. I can go to my spots, I can walk to the cellar from my apartment, I can walk to New York Comedy Club, I'm right around the corner from there, I can walk to the stand. It feels like I can cheat, you know, because being able to walk anywhere in New York, especially all of your places of work, it feels like you're cheating. Like, I don't have to get on a train, you know? So there's something about that life that even though it's harder, it's easier, because it's just...
What would be the transition for you? What is the bonus for you moving out here, being closer to your manager?
Manager, reps are all out here,
and
you know?
What else?
Do you
want to act?
I'd like to get back into acting at some point, but it's not... Stand-up is like my love.
Okay.
That's really
doing,
all I...
Are you doing spots right now?
Yeah.
Like in town?
Yeah.
The improv gives you love?
The improv, Ice House just reached out to me. I'm trying to kind of like get into the store a little bit. Just like I'm hanging out there, putting in the,
like,
you know,
and
doing those produce shows. I love the store. Yeah. Like, I love clubs. Those are the places I'm most comfortable. There's a lot of places in LA to do comedy that aren't clubs, but I'm more of a club comic. So that's kind of it. Like, I love New York because there's so many clubs and I can just do the clubs every night and they fucking pay. Like, the cellar has paid my rent. I'm so grateful to them. They are like, I mean, Esty's been good to me since I got past there about 7 months ago. So much so that I feel guilty being out here, you know?
Stay there. Fuck this place. Stay there.
It's great.
You know, it's funny. One of my dearest, dearest, dearest friends is Ari Shaffir.
Yeah.
And I was one of the guys who said, New York is the place for you.
Yeah.
Because every night he was out till 6.
Yeah.
This is a play. If you're out till 6 here, you'll never go home in New York.
Right.
You know, I can't. I think that would. I mean, like I said, my time is, you know, to be 40 in New York now and be a stand-up and go to the cellar and stop for a slice of pizza on the way home.
Yeah.
Bullshit at the pizza parlor, you split a stromboli.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't even imagine how great that is.
Yeah.
For me now, 1 a.m. is like fucking 5 a.m. Like, I'm already wiped out.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is like, I'm starting to get to that age where it's like, I'm thinking about getting married, having kids. I want to, like, you know, it's like, I'm
Rose
so Brett, torn.
Do you want to do stand up or you want to get married? You don't, because that's what happens. You can't let your uterus get in the way now.
I know.
Now you're on deck. You've worked 6 years.
Yeah.
To get to this place. The kids.
That's gotta take the back burner. Yeah.
Tell him to use his ratty hand for a couple more months. That you ain't gonna fucking just keep telling him to use the hand. There ain't no kids here.
Right.
Listen, man, it adds a complete dimension.
Yeah.
It adds a complete different dimension to your comedy life.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even, if I had a kid right now, I wouldn't give a shit about comedy. That's what would happen.
My
brain would completely change.
I've become a father. I've seen how to do the balance.
Yeah.
I've become the balance. You know, there's no way I'm going out for 6 weeks and not seeing my kid.
Right.
That ship sailed. Sorry, Charlie.
Yeah.
I got to come home every Sunday because I got to be there for family dinner at 6.
Right.
Nice and easy. Tonight we eat like a family.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know? You need that structure as a stand-up. If not, you're just, you know.
So, but then it helps you, like, in a way, like, to have
when
that structure.
When I got into stand-up, I had to stand up to live like Lenny Bruce.
Yeah.
You know what that means? Whatever comes, comes. You got pills? Drop them.
Right.
You got heroin? Let's do it.
Yeah.
You got, you're on the period? Let's eat your asshole. You know, you know what I'm saying? Like. I got into stand up not to have rules.
Yeah.
In my world, rules were not going to abide.
Yeah.
I did not want to get up and me, you, and him have to fight for the bathroom at 8 a.m. after he took a shit in there and I took a shit in there. And now you got to get ready for work. I didn't want that rush.
Right.
My mother didn't have a day job. My mother owned the bar.
Yeah.
So she opened it in the daytime. But then she went back home and did what she did till 8 o'clock.
Right.
And then she took it over at night. I liked that. I saw that as a child, how it worked for her.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed. She could go to Met games.
Right.
You being a Knicks fan, she was a Met bitch. So she would go to every fucking Met home game.
Yeah.
Know? So as a young man, that was screwed into my psych that the day job wasn't going to work.
Right.
I wanted to really do it. I really wanted to be part of a team and all that shit.
Yeah.
Go to business meetings.
Not a joiner.
Fuck you.
Right.
And once you make that decision, then there's limited. You could work in a warehouse at night.
Yeah.
A bar. So my options.
Yeah. You
and
know,
this
people...
is how you ended up with stand-up. You had options.
Yeah.
Theater, acting. They weren't for you. Boom.
Yeah, I mean, I've never wanted any kind of structure. I don't like structure, but I do know that it's good for me. Like, my brain chemistry responds well to it, but everything else in me is just like, no. Like, I've never bought a plane ticket more than a week in advance, ever. Like, I don't do it. You know, I don't... People who, like, plan trips and stuff, like, my boyfriend now, he, like, loves to plan shit. And I'm like, I can't do it. I don't know what's going
to... I don't know what
I could get hit by a bus.
Yeah. Why are we talking about April?
Right.
It's fucking January
20th. I hate that we still go home for Christmas. That is like my biggest problem. I start getting questions about Christmas and Thanksgiving in August. I'm like, I cannot... I don't even... I might not even know you guys by then. I don't know what's going to happen.
The same way. Nothing irritates me more in life than... I do. For the road, I get my plane tickets way ahead of time.
Yeah.
Like, if it's, I know if a city I want to go to.
Right.
If I'm flying JetBlue Mint, I want that single out.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll book it now for December.
Yeah.
Fuck you. I'm going in that solo cabin. So.
Right, yeah.
But there's been, Southwest, you can book, you know, who gives a fuck a weekend before. There's all those little trips like that. Here's the thing. With stand-up, I don't have structure in my life, but I do.
Yeah.
Because at some part of the day, some place to be at every time,
every night,
And I did that once, you know. For me, it was 95. I knew that I had to be out every night, every night.
Yeah.
Your friend's party, sorry.
Yeah.
Your mom's graduation, sorry.
Yeah.
That's the mind spill.
Like, yeah.
Your leg hurts, you got to go out.
Right.
Your pussy hurts, you got to go out. Or something's leaking out of your toe, sorry, you got to go out.
Yeah.
You know, you had to write, and you had to be part of a clique. There was just things I knew that were, like, I didn't watch TV. Like, you ever see Seinfeld? Not really.
Yeah.
I never saw an episode of Friends.
I'm trying to do stand-up every night.
Sports? I didn't know fucking sports.
Yeah.
I didn't watch television from 1991 to 2003 when I had auditioned for NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
That was the first time. I didn't even know what NYPD fucking Blue was. I didn't know nothing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. When you become a stand-up and you dedicate yourself to becoming a stand-up, if you become...
That's it.
For me, it was the weight gain. For me, I ballooned up to 418 pounds because I was that much into stand-up.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Fuck the fucking gym from now on.
Yeah.
So I could see that's the love that you got for it now.
Yeah.
I could see it in your eyes.
Yeah.
When you thought you were at that six-year level, forget it.
Yeah.
You know? Somebody wants to eat your pussy? Not right now.
No, I've got a spot.
I got a spot.
I can't tell you how many times I've fucking... It's so hard, too, because I spent the better part of this year single for the first time as a comic. That is a fucking nightmare. As a female comic, dating, like, a civilian, it's impossible. It's not even in the cards. Like, it's... Because they either love what you do... so much that they feel like a fan, or they think they can do it better and they don't know how to deal with you being funnier than them, or like the fact that they say something to you and you're like, you can hit them right back, like so much harder than they were expecting, you know? It was a dynamic that I just immediately, it'll dry you right up, like being out to dinner with a guy in a suit who has a regular life. I tried to like it, and I couldn't.
You
I was
get a
just
comic
like,
now?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the only thing that works.
No.
It's
for
it.
Now.
For now.
For now, yeah.
Yeah, but...
10 years, you might feel a little different. You're like, I don't want to come home and talk about fucking comedy. You know, that's the truth. Go ahead.
It's nice, because I don't... He's good. Like, we're both sober. There's, like, more than just comedy that we have, so it's... And it doesn't feel like we only talk about comedy, which is nice. I feel like we kind of rarely do. But because I've dated comics, I know the drill. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about comedy with our clothes off. Don't ever fucking bring up a club name while we're in bed. You know what I mean? Like, you know, gross. You know?
Rosebud, you always got a place here. Whenever you want to stop on the podcast. Where's the website?
It's rosebudbaker.com. And I announce a lot of show dates and podcast updates and shit on Instagram. So follow me on Instagram at rosebudbaker and Twitter at rosebudbaker.
You're fucking great. I like how you adjusted to the city. And
thanks.
I have a lot of respect for comics. I know the grind.
Yeah.
Once you know the grind, yeah, what somebody's going through, you know how serious they are about something, how much it's very entertaining. You entertain me. I went in and watched some of your stuff, and I thought back to when I was, I'm not a bitter old man by no means about comedy. I'm very grateful and thankful I'm here. But it reminded me of a time in my life when this was still fun. Before I had to deal with agents and managers and, you know, CBS wants you to do this, so you can't say that joke anymore.
Yeah.
You know, when it was just a free time.
Right.
It's like some of the best times of your life, you know, and you're going through them right now, and I just want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
Did your episode air?
It aired, yes. Okay. Yes.
So now where can you, because you came in and Adam Meyer came in, so I've had a couple of the ringers.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's good. That's,
yeah.
Eleanor, isn't that, is this what Eleanor's
Eleanor?
On?
Eleanor, yeah, yeah.
So we'll have Eleanor on. So this is good that Bill's doing this. And,
yeah.
Comedy Central. How many minutes they give you?
They gave me about eight.
That's
eight
not
minutes.
Bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It
they
was
beep
good.
You?
Huh?
They beep you? You kept
No, they
clean.
Had to cut one joke that I do. It's a joke about the word retarded. That
okay.
I,
yeah,
but you
that
know what? I was in the middle of doing it,
yeah,
and I turned to the cameras while I was on stage and said, please don't put that on TV. So, like, it was in the middle of the taping, and I just had a panic attack and turned and was like, guys, don't. And then went on with my set. But so they cut that out. But, yeah, the rest of it I was pretty happy with.
Well, fuck
yeah.
It. I'm happy that things are going in your favor.
Thank
and
you.
And say hello at the store.
I will.
You know, it's a process like anything else, but I think you got it so good in New York. Just come out here for your little,
yeah.
Little, what do they call those people that leave the fucking East Coast to go to Florida in the
snowbird.
Winter?
Snowbird.
Oh, yeah.
Just be a snowbird.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to tell you, come back for pilot season, but there's no pilot season no more.
Right.
Pilots get put out all year long.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, you're always welcome on the show. Any dates you want to promote now?
Yeah, February 4th, I'm going to be at Dynasty Typewriter here in LA at 8 o'clock. So I'll be doing an hour.
Oh, and, shit.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And
oh,
then
shit.
My podcast drops March 3rd, but you can subscribe to it on Monday, tomorrow, at it's Devil's Advocate at Rosebud or with Rosebud Baker, and it's on All Things Comedy. Sorry, I can't fucking plug shit. I'm stupid. Here.
See what happens when you quit smoking marijuana. Anyway, don't forget, this Saturday night, there's still a couple tickets left. Second show, Tabernacle Theater, Atlanta. And then fucking, what else? I got something else here. I know I got some. Oh, shit. First off, Narcos, February 13th. Oh, shit. I knew I had something special to tell you, motherfucker.
Your hands started shaking.
But, oh, shit. But I'll also be at the Tempe Improv, the 13th, Valentine's Day. And the 15th, listen, guys, you really want to turn your wife on, come see me on Valentine's night down in Phoenix. I'll have a fucking licking your nutsack and drinking juju juice. Fuck the chocolate. You're going in deep. Anyway, Christmas has gone and gone, but the Super Bowl is quickly approaching. We've seen just what our teams are capable of this season. And now it's time to get your last bets in before the bowl. Did you see what happened with Conor McGregor and Cowboy? Did you bet him? No. Head over to mybookie.ag to make your predictions a reality. MyBookie is one of the most trusted in the industry. If you're looking for a sports book to make some bets for the bowl games, MyBookie is where you want to go. Football's not your thing, no worry. MyBookie also has the NBA to the Premier League to college basketball. They got the fastest payouts, best promotions, and the very helpful 24/7 customer service team. You can even pool your bets together for a bigger payout. How do you like that? Let's say you got a couple of big favorites that week. The parlay wagers let you bet multiple games together. And if they all come through, you win big. MyBookie has more lines and better odds for the player than any other sports book around. So do me a favor, the Church family. Go to mybookie.ag. Why? Because they'll match your deposit halfway, 50%, up to $1,000. Joey, what does that mean? I'm stupid. Okay, here you go. If you deposit two G's, they're going to throw in a G of free money for you to play. All you got to do is go to mybookie.ag and enter the promo code CHURCH to activate the offer. Once again, that's mybookie.ag. Enter promo code CHURCH to get your extra cash with my bookie. You bet, you win, you get paid. Listen, you're getting old, you're working out, you're complaining, you're getting anxiety, you're having a hard time sleeping at night. You don't want to do the fucking Xanax or the fucking, you know, Gorilla Biscuits. I got the answer. CBD. That's it. It works for Uncle Joey. I suffer from fucking insomnia. CBD. CBDLion.com. That's the most trusted company in the industry. Why? Because your Uncle Joey tells you why. That's why. How do I know? I've been dealing with marijuana for fucking 55 fucking years. I think I smoked pot in the womb. That's how fucking I was. So do me a favor. CBD's one thing. I'm just fucking around with you guys. Listen, CBD Lion, the best. Go to the website and see their third-party test results. Whether you want to do the tincture, whether you want to do the gummy bears, I'd recommend the raspberry ones. But the strawberry ones and the orange ones are fucking delicious. They got the vapor. They got the shatter. That vapor doesn't have the vitamin E acetate, so your lung won't pop out of your fucking head. But listen, me, I'm a tincture type of dude. At night when I get home from the store, I'm all wired up. I plug in like 3,000-5,000 milligrams of CBD, and I sleep like a baby. I even put tincture in the water in my sleep apnea machine to help me relax while I fucking sleep. Who the fuck you think you're dealing with, Joey Bananas? So fuck it. Go to CBDLion.com right now and enter code
CHURCH.
Bam! And get 20% off. Delivered right to your house. No more liquor store. No more voodoo fucking CBD oil. Just straight up the real deal Holyfield. Uncle Joey swears by it. CBD Lion. I want to thank mybookie.ag. I want to thank CBD Lion. I want to thank Rosebud Baker. But most importantly, I want to thank you motherfuckers for working on this. The closing song is I Want to Be Around by Tony Bennett. Play it on your own, all right? We can't do this shit no more. They're going to throw us under the fucking jail. What do you want from me? So right now, put on fucking Tony Bennett. It's Monday, and we'll see you motherfuckers bright and early either Wednesday or Thursday morning. We haven't decided yet. Have a great day. Stay black. Thank you very much. We're on Spotify. Thank you, Rosebud.